Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panellists include local judge, tournament organiser, and contributor to the Australian Tabletop Gaming Network, Thomas Daniel.
How are you going, Brian?
Runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey everyone, how are we doing?
Two-time store champion and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wolfie Horrig.
Hi, I hope everyone's having a great day.
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Good to be here.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. We're going to open our episode tonight with a continuation on our meta strategy segments. So today's meta strategy segment is going to be on mid-range decks, basically how to identify one, what one is, what the strategy is, etc. So Wilfie, I was wondering if you could start us off there. What is a mid-range deck?
So a mid-range deck is one which is trying to pressure the opponent's resources on a number of successive turns, not necessarily too early or too late, but at a time where near the middle of the game where the deck is at its most efficient. So usually a corp mid-range deck tries to, you know, defend its servers lightly early so as to not get overrun by aggressive runner decks, and then score from a remote very quickly using cards that are powerful but might lessen in impact as the game goes on. So it's not trying to push out agendas as fast as possible, but it's trying to create a safe and efficient server or some scoring mechanism, not necessarily a remote server, that will end the game before the controlling runner has a chance to overtake them. And conversely, a mid-range runner is trying to manage the corp's resources. So against an aggressive corp, usually a mid-range runner is trying to make sure that the corp can't score too early and try and constrain them from being able to score from remote servers. And against a controlling corp, usually the mid-range runner is trying to play some really effective cards that will make their runs very efficient and will allow them to keep up in the late game against a controlling corp even as they get slower and slower. So this kind of ability to take on two roles is something which epitomizes a mid-range deck depending on what sort of strategy the opponent is facing. And this kind of flexibility can be really, really powerful.
Mid-range corp decks tend to be quite focused on setting up that light ice early. And then finding a way to lure the runner into making runs that are inefficient early. So as a mid-range corp deck, you might have to cop one or two R&D accesses, you might have to cop a couple of HQ accesses. But because as a mid-range deck, you can manage where your agendas are, because you're probably going to have less agendas in your deck than an aggressive deck, you can reduce the likelihood that those fewer early accesses are going to be impactful. And then what you can do, as in that the runner's going to steal agendas. And then what you can do is, if the runner is not stealing agendas early, but they've depleted their resources trying to do so, you can use a remote server to try and score agendas out of, because whilst they've been running on your servers, you've been resing quite cheap ice that might be binary. So they've run into them, face-checked them, gone and got their breaker, run a couple of times, hopefully haven't scored anything, but have depleted their resources. Meanwhile, you've invested very little in your ice, and you've been playing operations or assets to build up your economy. Then you can use, at that particular point in the game, what is hopefully a superior amount of credits to res some powerful and impactful ice on your remote server and score an agenda behind it, which will hopefully be an agenda that can assist you in scoring further agendas, like priority requisition to res a big piece of ice, or a utopia fragment to make your further agendas more difficult to steal.
And on the other side, there is a mid-range runner. Often what I find you'll want to be doing is poking and prodding the corp with enough threat to try and make them spend their early game resources raising ice where they won't necessarily need to. And I find a great example of this is in the run cards that generate an economic advantage. Something like security testing or dirty laundry or retrieval run can force the corp to spend their resources, not necessarily where they would usually want to, so that when their economy is low, when you're quite satisfied that they've developed as much as they can without further development being detrimental, you can slam down a piece of multi-access and start making those runs in order to win the game before the corp can get back on their feet.
Excellent. Do we think that mid-range decks can sometimes be difficult to identify because they seem to be able to masquerade as one side or the other, be it aggro or control?
Yeah, one of the things that mid-range decks will often be characterized by is that they may lend themselves more towards a controlling or an aggressive strategy, but they may have made some compromises in deck building that mean they include cards that allow them to play the other role. So you might have a runner deck that seems quite aggressive, has quite a few multi-access cards, has quite a lot of event economy, and wants to gain sort of an advantage early that they can leverage in the mid-game. But they may also compromise and include some cards that are slower, like Professional Contacts, so that they can play the more controlling role if they need to, and they can compete in the long game against controlling co-op decks where the agendas are harder to find early and when they need to be able to get into servers late. So a mid-range deck can sometimes be a variant on an aggressive or a control deck that makes some concessions to the metagame and includes a number of cards that either speed it up or slow it down and harm, therefore, the dominant aggressive or control strategy. But there are some decks that are pure mid-range decks in the sense that they are really trying to conserve resources but sort of still be able to parry in the early game and are really trying to rush to either steal or score points in the mid-game. That's what you'd sort of call a pure mid-range deck.
I think a good sign of a mid-range deck, especially as a runner, is often the kind of breakers that they want to utilize. I often find that to get a flexible rig and to flexibly respond to both aggressive and control styles, you don't just want to have necessarily a fixed strength breaker suite, or you don't want to have just high cost breakers that are really flexible. You want to have a good mix so that, if you do need to draw off the top and find a cheap breaker or special order for a cheap breaker, you have that option. Even if towards the late game, you're happy to overwrite that. So a combination of Yogg and Passport, or a combination of Inti and Snowball, is often what you'll see in those mid-range strategies.
Excellent. Now, we also have prepared a couple of very deep examples through the format of a few deck techs. So the first deck tech we have is Leela Patel, which Liam actually played at CanCon this weekend. Liam, how was that for you?
Yeah, it was really, really fun, actually. CanCon was a sweet weekend. I played Leela Patel mid-range in both of the events that I played. There was Tom's CanCon City Grid event that he put on with some sweet playmats. You probably would have seen them in our video that we put up over the weekend. And I also played them in the CanCon Store Championships. So the Leela mid-range deck was kind of a variant on an Andromeda mid-range deck I've been playing for a while. So what I've been finding is that as Andromeda, I've been going more and more and more for professional contacts, and the nine cards in hand at the start of the game has become less and less relevant because I haven't necessarily wanted to be very aggressive a lot of the time. And while it has been good to have Desperado and Data Sucker and testing on such a wide number of different occasions in the early game, often just because of the way you need to develop your rig, maybe lay down an Earthrise Hotel or lay down that contacts and draw some cards, those runs won't necessarily be happening more than once a turn, and sometimes you don't even want to run. So I'd made the decision to shy away from that and try out some abilities I thought were maybe a bit more flexible and might be a bit stronger in that mid game. And Leela Patel has exactly that ability. So I'm playing two hostages and the professional context to try and have that as often as I can without really putting a lot of redundancy in the deck. And there is a lot of other economy so that while you don't have contacts in play, you can still reliably draw cards and gain credits and interact quite a lot. But when it does come down and come online, that's when the deck really picks up. And I think that the real power of Leela Patel in the mid game here is that when you are developing your mid game rig, when you are preparing to lay down an R&D interface or preparing to legwork, what you'll find often is that the corp, maybe even more aggressive corps, will see your rig, see that you're short on breakers, and take that opportunity to deploy a piece of ice and install an advance an agenda, or install advance an agenda. And in these windows, that's when you pounce. That's when you get in there with Leela's little boxing habits and you give them the 1-2. You hit them with an R&D interface, hopefully score that agenda off the top. And if you don't, you hit them with a legwork, bounce that agenda from their server, and then go to the next turn. Continue contacting, continue developing your rig, and just leave them in this mid-game zone for as long as possible where you dominate.
One of the central things that is important to know with a mid-range deck is timing. They're really decks about attacking the opponent at exactly the right point. And would you say that Lila's ability epitomizes that? Like, how can you give us some examples as to how her ability, like, obviously her ability is useful in that sense, but some, can you give us some examples of how that might occur in practice?
Absolutely, yeah. There were lots of games that day against NEH in particular. I think I played two games against NEH. You'll know that Nerothub has that capacity to score out of hand with a Bionic or a Sansan. And in those circumstances where they do score, just a breaking news out of hand or a Beal off their Sansan or an Astro, which is a bit worse but still manageable, having the capacity to bounce the ice on HQ or bounce that second piece of ice on R&D means that you don't need that breaker to respond to their aggression and try and peel some agendas yourself, which in turn gives you the capacity to bounce more ice, putting the opponent further back in the game whilst developing your position and leaving them perpetually in the early to mid-game stage is exactly what this deck is about. There are some other examples, definitely, where against Glacier decks in particular, I would just sit back and just find that contacts early, draw cards for a lot of the time, and because Glacier decks usually can't score out of hand, you wait for the opportune moment where they finally do feel comfortable saying install, advance, advance, and in that turn, you run their server, deplete their credits, and then turn around and hit them with an R&D interface or hit them with a legwork. Sometimes you won't score, and that's okay because you still hit their economy very aggressively in this mid-game period. But when you do score, the fact that you can bounce that agenda back to their hand, maybe even score that if you're scoring off a legwork, and then bounce another piece of ice and continue this mid-game aggression. Yeah, this really does epitomize that mid-game aggression strategy.
Liam, do you have any advice on how to play against a mid-range runner deck, or how to play against your Leela deck specifically?
I guess I haven't quite worked it out that well yet, because the threat from Leela is just so versatile. I mean, the obvious and maybe naive thing to consider is making sure that all your permanents are rezzed, and that could be a good strategy there, maybe including something like Executive Boot Camp in your deck so that you can rez ice on your turn and not rely on the runner running to give you that opportunity. Part of it might be changing your playstyle a little bit, being a bit more conservative. Generally, I find mid-range decks don't do too well once they fall out of that mid-range bracket, once you have the economy to let their, you know, take their hits on the chin. Once you have the economy to res the ice all around on your R&D in response to their interface and on your HQ in response to your legwork and on your remote all at the same time. And so control decks, I think, tend to do quite well there because they do have that late game asset economy, maybe a Melange or maybe an Eve campaign or maybe some Sundew supporting them throughout the entire game and getting them into that late game position. Conversely, and a good way to go about it might just be to be more aggressive. Once your ice is rez, Leela Patel doesn't have the option to bounce it. So if you do want to rez a Quandary or a Paper Wall on HQ, maybe in response to just a face check, she will need to find that breaker, that Corrother or that Passport, as she'll likely play for the aggro decks. And that's the situation where, you know, if she does maybe succumb to a little bit of variance, or maybe the cards just don't turn out in her favor, or she doesn't really have the access to the special order, you can just begin to overwhelm just by scoring straight out of hand with a fast advance strategy like Nerothub or like Engineering the Future fast advance. So yeah, really pressuring from one of those angles is certainly the place you want to be, but under no circumstances do you want to try and compete with a mid-range deck in the mid-game. It's where they're built to optimize. So you really just have to make that decision whether to lose that early game impetus and just try and get your assets online, get some ice, and try to slow down that remote so that you can get past the mid game and res that ice everywhere. Or you can be more aggressive and decide just to win before the mid game comes about and just pressure them with a very binary ice. I think they're probably the two ways you can go about beating a mid-range deck like this.
Yeah, I think the great thing about Leela's ability is that it allows her to come back even in the late game if a Corp does try and go into their shell, because Corp that is deploying defenses across all its centrals and trying to build up defenses on a remote so that it can score in the late game is spreading its resources thinly. The way that the cost of the Corp cards and the economy in the game is managed from a design perspective means that a Corp's not going to be able to do that and build each of those servers to be impenetrable to the runner. So because Leela's ability allows her to eat away at unrezzed ice just by scoring, all she needs to do is get into one server to be able to undermine those others that the Corp spent lots of time and money preparing. So if she can, if the Corp does decide to sit back and not really try and score, Leela can also do that and then just make one impactful run on HQ or R&D through a legwork or through an interface, score an agenda, and really cripple the remote at the same time, which is a very powerful ability to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Enhanced Login Protocol is a particularly powerful card against Leela because she does have so much of her game plan tied up in those runs, in the security testing or in the R&D interface accesses. However, it's not a perfect answer because there is still dirty laundries, there are still legworks and siphons, and you know, she can still pressure from those angles without spending those clicks. And just like Jesse said, towards the late game, you know, she can chip away piece by piece as you score and as she scores. So I did feel very, very favored all day against controlling strategies and against replicating perfection control strategies. And incidentally, also against Jinteki personal evolution strategies. The Mushin Noshin was a complete flop in that matchup. I had the access to Maker's Eye, I had the access to legwork or to run with R&D interface, make a score, and just bounce that Mushin Noshin. It was like playing an exploratory romp, but without putting the card in my deck, which was just insanely good. You know, you bounce it to hand and you see the cards in there and you get to see that it was a June bug or that it was a snare, and that's a snare to the face, but now you know how your opponent's trying to condition you, which is really what those matchups are about. So yeah, maybe fast advanced strategies would be the most appropriate way to go against this particular style. But in general, I feel in response to a mid-range style, either being more aggressive or more controlling is appropriate. But Leela certainly can pressure the control decks a little bit more than your average mid-range deck.
Can you just point out, Liam, that your deck in particular can perform extremely well even when you don't bounce anything at all?
Yes, 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 yes. I did miss a lot of my triggers. That's another thing. If you want to play this deck, you must remember to use your ability. Brian asked me how I was doing with the mask and caught me off guard before I realized the mask was an identity with no ability.
Moving on, we've also got a deck tech from Jesse on an HB mid-range deck. Jesse, you also had this on the weekend, I believe. How'd that go?
Yeah, it went really well. I hadn't really played this deck all that much before, but I'd been doing a little bit of testing and I was really happy with how it was feeling, and I decided to go with it for the weekend, and it worked out really, really well, actually. So yeah, I was very happy with it. So the deck is based around a very strong event economy. So it's playing two Celebrity Gifts with six of its influence, so that's quite a large investment. Two blue level clearance, a green level clearance, three hedge fund, and three restructure. So a really large event economy suite. And what it's aiming to do is to draw some of its reasonably cheap ice, reasonably cost efficient ice early in the game to defend its centrals, and on each turn be installing to gain your credit from Haas Bioroid and also trying to play at least one event to build up your economy. Then towards the mid game, trying to put a large piece of ice, preferably a toll booth, and then one other piece of ice to avoid an inside job on a remote, chuck an ash in there, and then try and score a beta test.
So Jesse, what you're describing does sound very much like a Glacier control archetype. What separates it and makes it a mid-range deck?
Glacier decks will often try and layer sort of three or four ice on their centrals, or at least on HQ and R&D, and then three or four ice on the remote plus an ash before they try and start scoring. This deck doesn't have as reliable an economy in the late game. I'm only playing two Adonis, which I often won't install unless I feel like there's a window there and I haven't gotten a agenda in hand. And it's not playing Eves. So the money that you make is not going to carry you as long into the game. And the ice that you're playing is a little smaller. So you've got two IQ, which is reasonably efficient to res early, but not huge in the late game. You're generally quite easy for runners to get through because decoders are quite efficient. You've got three Eli's, which are cheap to res, but again, you know, possible to get through in the late game. Viper, which is much better early. Roto Turret, which is much better early and is very vulnerable to Parasite. And Marcus. Then you've got some higher end ice. So the aim of this deck is not to be hard resing as much of that high end ice as what a Glacier deck is going to aim to do, but to try and hit some of the higher end ice with beta tests or with priority requisitions. So it's often going to be installing the smaller ice early, trying to only have one toll booth plus another small ice on the remote. And then if they run and force you to res the toll booth, you want to have the capability to res it. But oftentimes if runners feel like they can't get into a remote because you've been able to deplete them by luring them into your centrals early, and you've chosen the opportune moment to install your agenda, oftentimes they won't run and they'll just spend that turn sort of accumulating their resources. That means that if you don't have to res that toll booth, you've still got that money in the bank, which you can use later on for other things, for scoring more agendas or what have you. So if you're using your Pyrex and your accelerated beta test to try and res that big ice, then you're really just trying to create scoring windows on successive turns that aren't necessarily going to carry you into the long game and create inevitability, but they're going to make it just hard enough for a runner to get in on those key turns that you can keep scoring your agendas.
One of the things that you were, I guess, struggling with this deck was the last few kind of economy pieces. You mentioned Adonis there as being something that doesn't get played 100% of the time. Not that that's necessarily the worst thing in the world, but I mean, if you were to sleeve this deck up next week for another store championship, is there anything you would change?
At this stage, I'm reasonably happy with it. I mean, I think the economy package is definitely open to a little bit of change because there are free slots there in the sense that it's only playing two blue level clearance, so there's room to go up to three. Same with green level clearance, it's only playing one, so there's room to go up to two or three. So I definitely want to do a little bit more sort of hard thinking about that and whether those numbers are exactly right. I feel like the ice is in a really good place and it's the mix is playing out really well in the sense that there's lots of different strengths in both early and late game ice and lots of different costs that allow you to be efficient in all the phases of the game. But yeah, the economy package definitely could change around a little bit potentially, but not too much. I would say that I think Celebrity Gift performed really, really well, played exactly the role I wanted it to play, getting you back up after scoring from a reasonably low number of credits to a high number of credits that you can res Tollbooth or Heimdall in one turn, which is exactly what you want. And I guess the other thing I'd say is that Enhanced Login Protocol is an absolute all-star in this deck. It's one of the things that allows you to develop an economy faster than a lot of the aggressive decks and a lot of the sort of aggro or mid-range decks that are on the runner side, because it makes security testing and Desperado so much harder to use efficiently turn after turn. And it means if the deck didn't have that, then it would struggle very much to develop an economy faster than decks that are playing security testing. But because it's got Enhanced Login Protocol, it does have the capability to do so, which is a really big boon.
So, Tom, we've mentioned quite a lot about CanCon this past weekend, and you ran both the events up there. So can you tell listeners, you know, what CanCon is and how it all went?
So CanCon's a pretty big convention over the Australia Day weekend, which is always the 26th of January. This year was kind of the first big year for the LCGs in that a lot of them have got more popular. Because of that, we actually ran two Netrunner events, one on the Saturday, one on the Sunday. We were lucky enough to get the store championship kit in for the Saturday, so that's why we ran the store championship event. And on Sunday we actually did something special, the what I called the CanCon City Grid Championship, for lack of a better name, where we actually gave out some of the extra noise promos. People got to battle for some alternate art cards and also some sweet limited edition playmats, which I had printed up from artist Adam S. Doyle, who's probably, you know, on some of your favorite cards. So I didn't actually play in the events. Three of you guys did. What did you think about it?
Yeah, no, it was good. Really well run.
Yeah, I was really happy to have an event like this for Netrunner. It's something that we haven't really seen in Australia before, sort of a two-day event run around a premier tournament, being a store championship, and having both the prize support for the premier tournament, which was really exciting and got a lot of people traveling interstate, including us, to play, but also having another tournament the next day, which had sort of premier level prize support in that we had top four playmats plus a game night kit playmat. So five playmats plus the game night kit promos plus the additional promos, which is a lot of prizes for a tournament that was essentially sort of the size and cost of a game night. So that was a really big incentive for people to come along and play. And it just meant that I think everyone had a really good time playing for these sweet prizes. And everybody walked away pretty happy, I think, in the knowledge that even if they didn't managed to get one of those prizes, they had a really good shot at it and they had a really good day. And yeah, I think just props to Tom for conceptualizing this a long time ago. He's been promoting it for a long time and he put a lot of planning and effort into getting those playmats and that custom art done by Adam S. Doyle. And it really paid off. I think it was a great weekend.
No, it was very, very good. I think especially the some of the people we got to meet was very good. That's like with any event you might play interstate or another city. As we talked about in a New Player Primer episode, traveling around and meeting people who also play the game, who automatically have things in common with, is really good. I think a quick shout out to Mark P, who we also met. Mark lives in New South Wales, and he actually won our first competition and won that copy of Up and Over, so it was really great to meet him. And also young Riley, who was, how old was he, 10 or 11 years old? 11 years old. He turned up to the event and he'd forgotten his decks. He was quite upset. And, you know, the Netrunner community there sort of got together and, you know, got a couple of decks for him. And I think his entry was actually excused from the event too, I believe so, Tom. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So Glenn, the owner of the Games Capital in Canberra, let him play for free, which is pretty good. So props to Glenn and everyone at Games Capital.
And Riley actually finished the day on 7 points, which was exceptional. I've never really seen someone that young be able to figure out a game which is, as you know, sort of foreign and complex as Netrunner is off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just pointing back there, like, I think two great events with good prize support is more than enough for people that love the game to want to travel interstate. You know, just get in the car with their mates and, you know, travel for 7 or 8 hours, just jamming some tunes and talking some spam. It's a really, really good time. Oh, and shout out to Games Lab for supporting us with those noise promos as well. That was really cool of them. Those were all noise promos hanging around from the old Nationals event. So even after 80 players, there was still some left over. There was plenty of prize support to go around.
That's all we have time for this week. We'll be back next Monday as usual. Once again, an apologies for missing a week last week due to the CanCon weekend and the very, very long drive home. As usual, you can hit us up on Twitter at Winning Agenda. Check us out on Facebook at Like Pages, The Winning Agenda. Or you can shoot us an email with anything you'd like to know about us at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Until then, we'll speak to you soon, guys. Have a great week.
We await your questions.
See you guys.
See you guys.
Bye.